This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good evening, you're with Uma and Caroline today on the Evening Edition. Now, Parliament was busy some weeks ago. They rushed to push through a few bills to be passed in the wee hours of the morning. We read that in the news. And one of them being the Controversial Prevention of Terrorism Act, or POTA. Labelled by some as the ISA in disguise, the Act has received quite a lot of flack from people who claim that it quite simply strips Malaysians of their basic rights. So joining us today to give us their view on the matter, Dato' Saifuddin, Global Movement of Moderates Foundation, or GMM, head, and Christopher Leong, Bar Council member.
So, Dato' Saifuddin, you have been very vocal on both in the media and on Twitter about POTA, about the Sedition Act, mm-hmm. and state your opinion on these matters before we continue.
I think first and foremost, we must correct this worldview that if someone is critical about POTA, it doesn't mean that you are supportive of terrorism. Unfortunately, some people try to spin the story that way, that, oh, you're against POTA, therefore you are sympathetic to the terrorists.
That's the easy counter, right? It's too simple.
It's too simple. It's like very, unfortunately, some people believe in this kind of spin. I think we have to put the fact right. Number one, yes, we must fight violent extremism, including the ISIL phenomena. In this context, GMM is already involved in a certain way, not in the actual fight, because that is done by the professionals, but we are looking at the soft supporters, the fanboys and the fangirls, the midnight uploaders, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, the on the ground, the kind of psychological battle, right?
Yeah. But you have to have the right worldview. Say, for instance, in the context of fighting ISIL, all the strategies that was used and managed to diminish, say, the threat of Al-Qaeda may not work against ISIL, because ISIL is no ordinary terrorist group. How many terrorist groups do you think in the world will use the same strategy like ISIL? That they actually have like 30,000 fighters. They hold territories in Syria and Iraq. They maintain extensive military capabilities. They control lines of communication. They have their own command infrastructure. They have their own funding strategy. This is not Al-Qaeda. This is not guerrilla terrorists. You know, this is a bogus state, a rock state, which we have to fight. But all I'm trying to say is, you cannot just look at ISIL as if this is another outfit like Al-Qaeda. It's a different ball game, and you have to look at it differently. And POTA, to me, is not necessarily the best answer. Besides, legally speaking, I think SOSMA is sufficient.
So how sophisticated does it have to be a solution beyond POTA then? What should we be looking at?
Firstly, this is not a security matter per se, or simply a security matter. It is more than a security matter. It is a political security issue. So that worldview has to be there. So you know for a fact that if it is not just security, then you have to look at it from a holistic view. Now, if you were to compare the language used when the government presented the white paper and the language used in POTA, is a different language altogether. I thought the group who were the architect of the white paper understand this current situation probably better than the group preparing POTA.
Right. So, I mean, and talk to us about the act itself, Chris, because what Dato mentioned, right, POTA sounds like a blunt instrument for, in a very old-fashioned way of thinking. When I say old-fashioned, I just mean post-9/11, because that's the kind of line of thinking that went into crafting the Patriot Act, right? It's like, we need these extensive powers because we don't know where these people are coming from, so we just need to hold them for a little while we find out, right? So talk to us about POTA and how, you know, counter those arguments from people who tell you, hey, we need this. It's a dangerous world out there. Mm. This is something we need to keep our people safe.
Well, you know, first of all, our resort to POTA, the Prevention of Terrorism Bill, which when passed through Dewan Negara will become an act of parliament. I think it's not only a knee-jerk reaction, but a lazy reaction to addressing the terrorism threat, in particular the IS threat, and in our counter-terrorism efforts. Actually, we can look towards the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2178, which binds Malaysia being a non-permanent member of the Security Council. And, that resolution clearly said, and please allow me to read very quickly because it encapsulates the thinking, and that is recognizing that addressing the threat posed by foreign terrorist fighters requires comprehensively addressing underlying factors like countering incitement to terrorist acts motivated by extremism or intolerance, promoting political and religious tolerance, economic development, and social cohesion and inclusiveness. So the United Nations Security Council basically lays out that, as Dato' Saifuddin had earlier pointed out, the current terrorist threats are not like of the old. They have evolved. And they've evolved many times over, and they continue to evolve very quickly. It is a battle, not a physical one, but a battle of values and, ideals. And so when we, breaking ranks with the Security Council and breaching its resolution in enacting POTA, we must bear in mind that POTA is just scratching the surface. We have to remember that the war against terrorism, extremism, is not a physical war, but a war of ideals and principles, a contestation of values. The terrorists do not share, for example, our ideals or principles with regard to democracy, rule of law, human rights, principles of natural justice. In our counter-terrorism efforts, legislating POTA, what have we shown? We have shown, actually, that we are descending into the same abyss as the threat that we intend to fight. And that's the wrong approach.
That message from the UN Security Council resolution talks about the balancing act between fighting terrorists, go after them, and do whatever that is needful with your arsenal of strength, but at the same time, it's also about upholding freedom and democracy and human rights. You see, the worry here is, more often than not, this kind of harsh laws will be misused or abused. And no amount of harsh laws or draconian laws can actually stop terrorism if you are looking at it only from one angle. For instance, the Patriot Act did not stop ISIL. Yeah, we used to have ISA 1.0. Now it's ISA 2.0. Yeah, ISA 1.0 did not stop Al-Ma'una. So that's why I say that it is not just about security matter. This is, like Chris was saying, this is beyond the old threats of terrorism.
The conversation continues here on The Evening Edition. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. It's The Evening Edition. You're with Uma and Caroline. We're continuing our discussion about the controversially passed Prevention of Terrorism Act, together with Datuk Saifuddin, Global Movement of Moderates Foundation Head, and Christopher Leong, Bar Council Member.
How do you fight ideology, though, in that sense? I mean, are there countries that have gotten it right in that you have to focus on certain areas by means of legislation?
I think, first of all, fighting ideas cannot be done successfully by physically locking up somebody.
No, you're right. You can't. I mean, they tried with Mandela, they tried with Gandhi.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
And if you were to compare, say, the experiences in the UK versus the experiences in the US, I think the UK tend to, not that I'm a big fan, but I think their laws tend to be less as rigid as what, say, for instance, the Patriot Act and so on and so forth. Of course, they went through a long history of internal revolts, what have you.
Correct.
You know?
And they learned from the IRA days.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, the US was kind of a knee-jerk to 9/11, right?
Yeah, and the other thing about having this kind of law, research have shown that when government legislate this way, government will score high ratings from some component of the society. But there will be backlash in the form of pockets of radicalization, not necessarily amounting to becoming violent extremists, but there can be backlash. And I think in the context of POTA, I think the government have to be wary of the fact that there can be backlash.
Would you say what's going on social media and everybody talking about it is sort of the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the backlash?
I think what happened is when the government introduced POTA, we introduced it at a time when we are suffering from trust deficit, especially when the police were arresting people on Sedition Act. And immediately after POTA, you have the strengthening and tightening of the Sedition Act. So we started on the trust deficit. And in counter violent extremism, you have to have the support of the people, not necessarily in the actual work, but remember I told you about the soft supporters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about the fanboys. Now you want everybody to be on your side, if you can, yeah. And definitely you don't want this kind of reaction, as you were saying, in the social media. You can't find more than probably a handful of people who actually think that POTA is the right thing to do.
Yeah, actually, the question we should ask ourselves is that POTA purports to be a legislation, our effort. To address the terrorism threat. Why do you need to do away with all safeguards? We already, as Dato' Saifuddin said earlier, we had ISA 1.0. POTA is ISA 2.0. Together with, don't forget, they also amended the Prevention of Crime Act. Mm-hmm. And they amended it in such a way to include terrorism. So POTA is meant to address terrorism in terms of outside of Malaysia. The amendments to POCA is to address terrorism within Malaysia. So effectively, they have reintroduced the ISA for local consumption. And from our many decades of experience with ISA, we know that it has been massively abused. Learning from that experience, we ask ourselves this important question. Why is it that POTA does not build in safeguards? It instead ousts the jurisdiction of the court completely. You know, in bullet point, this is what really POTA is in terms of its draconian effect. We now, once POTA is passed, we detain persons merely on suspicion. We effectively hold secret hearings presided by non-judges by way of the Prevention of Terrorism Board.
That's right. Only the head of the board needs legal experience, right?
But not necessarily to be a judge. No legal representation is allowed, whereas the government is allowed to be assisted by the public prosecutor. So there's no equality of arms, no check and balance. There is no questioning or cross-examination of witnesses. There's indefinite detention without trial, 2 years at a time. No right of judicial review or challenge. Jurisdiction of the judiciary is completely ousted.
How is this not unconstitutional?
Very difficult. To my mind, this is definitely unconstitutional. But I think I know why they go away with the judicial review. They probably learn from the experience of the Patriot Act. There are at least three Supreme Court cases where the government lost. In the Rasul versus Bush, in the Hamdan versus Rumsfeld, and Bodimin versus Bush. Three landmark cases. And this is all about detention without trial. Mm-hmm. In the context of Patriot Act, where the US government lost the case. Yeah, so probably we learn from the US experience. So not having judicial review is probably the safest guard for the authority. I don't know.
Can I just clarify on the Patriot Act, since mention has been made of it? From my understanding, the Patriot Act actually is more keen to an immigration device, in the sense that the U.S. government was of the view that if somebody is suspected on good grounds to be a potential terrorist act, why should we allow that somebody to remain on U.S. soil? So the first thing that we should note is that the Patriot Act is addressed to non-U.S. citizens. It does not apply to citizens. And what it does is that it allows the authorities to call in a foreigner with a travel document and sit and bring that person before a tribunal, satisfy the tribunal that this person is a possible threat without charging. Why? Because there is no incarceration involved. The end result of that hearing would be, if the tribunal is satisfied, the person's right to remain on U.S. soil as a visitor, so whether as a student, on business visa, and so forth, is revoked, and the person will have to leave the U.S. That is very different from POTA, right? You know, so I think that is a distinction that should be made, because a lot of confusion has surrounded POTA.
After the news, we delve deeper into POTA and how the judiciary seems to be left out of the equation and what this means. Keep it here on BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition, and we're speaking about the Prevention of Terrorism Act, which was passed through in Parliament some weeks ago. And, it's shocked everyone for its draconian tone, really. Dato' Saifuddin, Global Movement of Moderates Foundation head, and Christopher Leong, Bar Council member, join us this evening to help break it down for us and discuss why, rather what, this act is really about.
Chris, is there a clear definition of what a terrorist is?
There's no definition of terrorists in the Prevention of Terrorism Bill. The bill defines a terrorist act as having the same meaning as assigned in the Penal Code. And you know that in the Penal Code, in I think the year 2003, it was amended to insert Chapter 6, capital A, which provides for a long list of terrorism offences. For example, I think it's Section 130J, for example. And Section 130J, coincidentally, can be used with respect to the foreign fighter phenomenon. So really, it is there. And the thing is, if it is not there, the government can amend the Penal Code to provide for more specific terrorism offences. They don't need to have detention without trial. Your earlier question about, isn't POTA unconstitutional? Well, you know, it is sought to be enacted under Article 149. And Article 149 of a federal constitution provides that any legislation enacted by Parliament under it allows the enactment to abrogate the fundamental rights under Articles 5, 9, 10, and 13. So effectively, what POTA now seeks to do in abrogating our rights under and POCA under Article 149, which abrogates Article 5, is POTA and POCA abrogates your right to life, liberty, and legal representation.
I'm so depressed.
So one of the concerns from the other side of the political divide is that POTA and POCA can be used to stifle political dissent. But these articles seem very rooted in terrorist activities. So is that harder to make a case for when it comes to, say, people protesting in the street and then getting arrested under ISA, for example?
Well, you know, you just have to look at our own history. When the ISA was enacted in Parliament in 1960, the then Deputy Prime Minister, the late Tun Abdul Razak, who is the father of our current Prime Minister, gave an express assurance in Parliament that the ISA was solely intended to counter the communist terrorist threat. And of course, we have since seen that it has been used against opposition members of parliament, members of civil society,
journalists,
activists, and so forth. So no amount of assurance or no amount of words in any legislation, I think, from our history has been a guarantee, safeguard against abuse. And that's why I again raise the question, why are you ousting the entire jurisdiction of our judiciary, which constitutionally is there as a check and balance with respect to parliament and particularly with respect to executive action? You know, we must bear in mind that laws must be just and compliant with the rule of law, rules of natural justice and human rights on its face. Its use and implementation cannot be left at the mercy of relying on the good faith of men.
One of the most interesting aspects of this is, you know, the lack of judicial review, that you don't have any recourse. You know, there are some arguments that say, hey, you don't have to be afraid if you're not a terrorist. But of course, my argument to that is, how do you know I'm not a terrorist? I don't have a right to speak, right? So I don't have a right to defend myself. Now, like you said, in the case of the US and the Patriot Act, there were legal actions taken against the government and against the act. Do citizens in this country have the right to do that, to challenge this act via other means?
Well, no. Under the proposed Prevention of Terrorism Bill, it provides in Section 19, in very clear words, and actually, I think they have learned from their past experience and tightened it. It says this: there shall be no judicial review in any court of, and no court shall have or exercise any jurisdiction in respect of any act done or decision made by the board in the exercise of its discretionary power in accordance with this act, except in regard to any question on compliance with any procedural requirement in this act governing such act or decision. And then early on in the same bill, under Section 8, it provides that the board is the master of its own procedure. So effectively, what it does, what it provides for, is that the court, you cannot resort to the court for anything that the board does.
Except on procedure.
Except on procedure.
But the board is the master of the procedure.
But the board is the master of procedure. And if the board sets procedures which are unfair, you cannot question that. So in other words, the Act effectively provides for the board to operate outside of the law and above the law.
That's incredible. It's just it's one iron door after another just slamming it in your face. Yeah. It certainly feels like. All right, let's try to be a little bit more optimistic.
It's
very difficult to be optimistic.
It is.
In this context, because even if you look at some of the other laws, yeah, if you revisit some of the laws, the apartheid laws of South Africa, and in other parts of the continent, it all started that way. That it is meant and aimed at a very particular context, and then it was expanded to include all others. And that all others sometimes, or more often than not, means people who are against the government of the day. And this is the sad thing that Porta has given us, that you are practically almost impossible for you to challenge the decision.
And what is even sadder is that actually we currently do have sufficient laws for the authorities to counter terrorism. They're found in the Penal Code. Mm. They're found in SOSMA, the Special Offences, Security Offences Special Measures Act, the Anti-Money Laundering and Anti-Terrorism Financing Act. Like I said earlier, the amendments in 2003 to the Penal Code introduced a whole raft of terrorism offences. They can add to it. They can add, for example, specifically the offence of fighting for a group or army which is not Malaysia. They have that in the US. It's called the neutrality provision. So they can reinforce the offences under the Penal Code. Section 4 of the Penal Code provides for the extraterritorial reach of this terrorism offence. So you can be liable under the Penal Code for acts here or abroad. SOSMA, in fact, has three parts to it. One, the first part of SOSMA provides for detention for investigative purposes. So it provides currently 28 days. The police can detain a suspect for 28 days for purpose of investigation. At the end of 28 days, you have to charge that person or you have to release that person. If you now tell me that because of the nature of the cross-border element of the terrorism, you require more time, so convince Parliament that you need 60 days or 120 days or 150 days. Whatever it is, it should culminate in a prosecution. You know, right now, Porter provides for the authorities to take somebody on suspicion with no recourse to court, lock them up, and the authorities can just sit back.
And throw away the key.
It doesn't require them to be serious about any investigation. The second part of SOSMA provides for special court and trial procedures for terrorism offences. You know, that means to say that there are procedures in there to ensure that witnesses are protected and so forth, taking into account the special features and dangers of terrorism. Thirdly, SOSMA provides for special intelligence and investigative measures like wiretapping, electronic surveillance, interception of all manner of communications and other forms of tracking and surveillance. So you actually have a complete suite of laws to address it without needing to resort to POTA and the amendments to POCA.
The only reason if you need a POTA would be because now you can extend the time to keep the accused behind, for investigation and whatnot, and you don't have to go to the court.
But POTA does not even purport to provide for detention for investigative purposes. The detention under POTA is an end to itself.
To itself, yeah.
Yes.
We'll be back after this short break to wrap up our conversation about the debatable act. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. We're back on the Evening Edition and we're concluding our discussion this evening about the Prevention of Terrorism Act with Datuk Saifuddin, Global Movement of Moderates Foundation head, and Christopher Leong, Bar Council member.
Datuk Saifuddin, this is the boogeyman of all laws. And I'm curious, for the average citizen, what recourse is there to make his opinion known? So what can you and I do? I'm a big fan of, you know, writing to your MPs and you know, putting pressure on your MPs. But is that the extent of our recourse?
The soft power.
The soft power? Yeah.
I don't know. Well, this is probably one of the ways that we can do, write to MPs. But now it's beyond the Dewan Rakyat. So now you have to write to the senators of Dewan Negara. But beyond that, I suppose we just have to go on talking about this to show our, you know, dissatisfaction, because otherwise people won't know. More often than not, I think people on the street will understand that, okay, the government, is very caring and wants to make sure that we can combat and fight terrorism, and therefore the government knows how to do it. But we are not saying that the government doesn't know how to do it. But I think I would say that the government could have done better. I mean, even if you need POTA, I used to say this before, even if you need POTA, it could have been done better. But the point is, many people are saying that you don't really need POTA, as Chris was alluding to.
Yeah, because the government hasn't made a strong enough case, right, as to why the existing laws, actually they haven't made any case as to why the existing laws aren't sufficient.
And everybody just reacts based on history and what we already know.
Yeah. Can I just say that, you know, if you look at the examples of the a few of the countries who are on the front line of this fight against the new terrorist act, terrorism, for example, the USA, Australia, France and Britain, they do not have the equivalent of our POTA. And the reason for that is because, again, they recognize that legislation such as POTA actually would be counterproductive. So, you know, again, you know, I refer to the United Nations Resolution 2178, where it expressly recognizes and affirms this, and I read this, and it's on the front page of the resolution. It says, reaffirming that member states, and Malaysia is a member state, must ensure that any measures taken to counter terrorism comply with all their obligations under international law, in particular international human rights law, international refugee law, and international humanitarian law, underscoring that respect for human rights, fundamental freedoms, and the rule of law are complementary and mutually reinforcing with effective counter-terrorism measures and are an essential part of a successful counter-terrorism effort, and notes the importance of respect for the rule of law so as to effectively prevent and combat terrorism, and noting that failure to comply with these and other international obligations, including under the Charter of the United Nations, is one of the factors contributing to increased radicalization and fosters a sense of impunity. Basically, put simply, if our response to terrorism is to sacrifice our own values and principles on the altar of expediency, then really what our enemies see of us is that they see that we are no different, and it reinforces them. Legislation such as POTA, prevention detention without trial particularly, is counterproductive to the fight against terrorism actually for four reasons. One, you know, it fuels the resentment that leads to more radicalization.
That's the one of the backlash I was talking about.
That's right. Yeah. Because it alienates, for example, the families, friends and communities of the person detained.
Mm.
Two, that lack of transparency in prevention detention actually undermines public trust in law enforcement and reduces cooperation with authorities. Thirdly, prevention detention fails to provide a long-term solution for neutralizing hardcore terrorists. It merely isolates them in the short to medium term, which can further radicalize them. Earlier, we spoke about how do you fight against ideas? Mm-hmm. Certainly not by physically locking somebody up. Mm-hmm. And fourthly, preventive detention frustrates criminal investigations.
You see, I mentioned earlier on the soft supporters. There are also the people known as the hard supporters. And among others, hard supporters do, like, for instance, they hide people or they simply don't cooperate. That is one of the backlash that Chris was mentioning. Yeah, they just don't cooperate. Why is it that they are not cooperating? Because they don't trust the law. They don't trust the authorities. So why should I talk to you? Because I fear for my own safety, in the sense that I may, you know, end up being accused of a suspect or a terrorist suspect. So this whole game, you know, have to be understood in a certain way, so that yes, even if you need law and you need, you know, you need to fight, you must fight your terrorism, but at the same time you must get buy-in from the people, because this is about getting information from the public. You know, I give you an example. My wife and I invited a young girl to the house, because my wife wanted this girl. She is doing interior design. So we were at the dining table, and this young girl opened her laptop. And guess what the screensaver is? There's the black flag at the back of it. There's a tank. There's a guy wearing black on top of the tank with AK-47.
Wow.
Now, is she a soft supporter? Maybe not. Maybe, you know, it's just flavor of the month. It's like everybody is having that skin saver. But what would people like her be thinking when she look at POTA, when she look at how, you know, the government is in a very harsh manner going after people? Yeah. I wouldn't say she's a supporter of terrorists or ISIL, for that matter, even though it was clearly an ISIL, skin saver. But these are the kind of people that may be affected in some ways or the other, even if they are not, you know, going to Syria or traveling to Iraq. But they may be holding information if you were to ask her why, you know, because they just don't trust, people like her may not trust the law, may not trust the authority.
Yeah. You know, don't misunderstand me or don't misunderstand Dato' Saifuddin and I. In our comments with regards to Porta, it is not that we are not concerned about the terrorist threat. In fact, you know, we are very concerned by the terrorist threat and of terrorists, whether such terrorists are acting alone or as part of an organization. But what we are saying is that Porta is not the answer. Porta appears to be a quick fix. It does not encourage the development of real investigative skills and abilities. In fact, it encourages the opposite, because it will be resorted to as an easy way out of doing real police work. You know, Porta is supposed to be a solution, but there is no easy solution. Resorting to Porta, worse, subscribing to the idea that Porta is needed in our fight against terrorism actually makes us much more vulnerable, for the reason that we become complacent in developing our real skills and abilities to investigate, counter, combat the terrorist threat.
Yeah, it makes us weaker. And like you said in the beginning, it's a lazy solution.
Yes.
Yeah. Dato' Saifuddin, one last thing. You've been in the belly of the beast. You know parliamentary procedure well. What's next? I mean, you said there is a recourse, you know, for people to write to senators. But, you know, once it's passed the Dewan Rakyat, is it a done deal? Is it a sure thing? Or can there be a last-minute twist?
Oh, well, we took how many years to repeal ISA 1.0? So, unfortunately, we probably have to go and revisit the same route and ask for Porta to be amended or Porta to be repealed. But at the same time, I think for the government, what is really needed is to come up with a holistic framework to counter terrorism. I don't expect the government to announce in details what they are trying to do or what they are doing or what they have done. But I thought, announcing to Parliament that they have in place a proper command center, a proper counter messaging technologies, and people working on it, and you can people working can see whether you have sufficient uploading of counter terrorism messages, and we have to bring it beyond Malaysia. Yeah, it has to be a regional effort. I think I'm more interested in looking at real things moving rather than Porta.
I think the answer really, one, is that recognizing there is no easy fix or easy solution. It is all about education, about identifying the elements that motivates extremism, that sets fertile ground for intolerance, and then promoting political, religious integration, freedoms, as well as social cohesion. I think these are the factors that will, in the mid to long term, be the solutions in the fight against terrorism.
Thank you, Dato' Saifuddin and Christopher Leo, for joining us this evening to talk about the workings of the Prevention of Terrorism Act. This has been the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.